Hello everyone, welcome to Open Mic Podcast presented by the Open Doors Initiative, which explores the challenges and opportunities of the working world from the perspectives of marginalized communities. The podcast will take the form of short interview segments with individuals who will share their life experiences and insights. My name is Hoga Yosefi Wardak, hosting the Open Mic Podcast. The podcast will be available from the Open Doors website and from different podcast streaming providers. It will be promoted online through social media and our member companies and supporting partners. Welcome back. I'm Hoga Yosefi, hosting the Open Mic Podcast. Today, we have a very, very special guest. Like, I'm so excited to have a chat with him and talk about different things in life, especially how the change is possible in life. So I will introduce my guest, Brian Finney, specialist in resilience, keynote speaker, neuroscientist, and former hearing adapter and doctor who is on a mission to show people the change is possible. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Hogan. Great to be here.
No worries. How are you?
I'm very good. Life is very good at the moment. And something we chatted about beforehand, it's like there'll be the ups and downs of life, but it's really our lens around that. And life is good with the ups and downs.
Great. And, you know, like your smile, your power, motivation, wow. You know, it gives me the power to be with you, and it's so excited with you.
Thank you.
So I will start my first question, Brian. Just tell me about your journey so far.
My journey so far, and I know everyone's journey starts from the moment they were born, but my challenges started from the moment I was born. So I came into the world with a condition known as intestinal malrotation. In layman's terms, my guts, my intestines were twisted.
Yeah.
Basically, I ended up ultimately having an operation without a general anaesthetic.
Yeah.
That was a practice before in medical practice pre-1985. Mm-hmm. And the trauma, the bodily trauma from that experience and the complications afterwards really set the tone for my life. Like, as a neuroscientist now, that set the tone for me to become a finely tuned anxiety machine. That trauma left an imprint. That left me afraid of my heartbeat, pulse. And that was my whole childhood. Constantly worried, constantly agitated, constantly anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I often say I never got the anesthetic I needed as an infant. But I found my anesthetic when I was 17 in the form of heroin.
Wow.
And that brought me on a journey where I just got deeper and deeper and deeper into addiction. I got lost for many, many years. And I didn't find recovery until I was 35 years of age. I was very lucky that I had a shift in perspective from a near-death experience. It was ultimately the most painful night of my life. But that gave me a different lens to look at the world. And it was a shift in presence, a shift in how I see in the world.
Yeah.
It was like all of a sudden the world just glowed. It's very hard to put words on that experience, but something shifted in my being. I had a sense of hope.
Yeah.
And with that, I just developed this intense curiosity. With a sense of hope.
Wow.
Yeah, I developed an intense curiosity about the human mind, and I went on to study. And as I said, I got a PhD in psychology and neuroscience, and I'm still learning every day, like today.
Yeah, and still you're alive with a good smile. Yeah.
Thank you.
No worries. Brian, how would you apply what you have learned from your own transformation to those who are struggling to find their path?
I believe, and there's so many tips, tactics, and strategies, and they work. They do work. They don't work for everybody. But I think an underlying message for people is that awareness is the catalyst for change. Like, a lot of people know what they have to do.
Yeah.
But knowledge is not where the game is played. It's played in the actions that you take.
Mm-hmm.
And through actions, I think that's where awareness
arises.
Like,
you should take action.
Take action and learn in the process. Like, I think that's really, really important. And we touched on it again before earlier on. It's like, experience lots of different things. And I think that brings an awareness with that as well. But for me, if we're talking about tactics for change, like, we talk about meditation, we talk about looking inwardly, and I think that's very important, to be aware of your own emotions, your own inner voice. What are you telling yourself on a daily basis? Because if you have a harsh inner critic that's telling you you're a piece of crap, you're going to feel like a piece of crap. So becoming aware of your inner world, I think, is fundamentally the catalyst for change.
That's good. Brian, I'm just asking, like, most of the people in the world, they are relying on the education degree for a change. And they are just saying with themselves that as much as we can learn, it means like the change is coming to our life. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't think, like, you can be an expert in maths. You can be a brilliant coder for Python, coder for computer science. You can speak 10 languages. But if you can't regulate your emotions or manage communication effectively, none of that is really going to matter. So education is fundamentally important to give you a cornerstone to do things in the world. But I think you need good foundational mental and emotional fitness, emotional agility to be able to navigate the stresses of life so you can implement what you learn education-wise and put it into the real world. So I think, though, I don't like the word soft skills. I think human skills is better. How to be happy, how to communicate, how to regulate emotions. Get them right and then education will just stand on the shoulders of that.
Like when the people are facing with lots of challenges and problems and pains in their life, they're just stopping and they stand and they say, okay, we cannot move anymore. So what is your message for those people? Like they lost themselves, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard when you're in the middle of that because I was in that position for, I'd say 25 years of my life, but particularly 15 years. And no matter what somebody would have come in and said to me, there's nothing that they could have said that would have changed me in that moment. So if anyone is in that position, I would just think, have a bit of self-compassion for yourself. Like, it's hard. You're stuck right there. So I think what they need to hear is maybe seeds of hope that change can be for them. So it can be quite challenging. And what I would say is take baby steps. You don't have to change everything all in one fell swoop. So maybe it's about going and talking to somebody. It doesn't have to be a therapist. Maybe therapy is down the line. Maybe it's not about having a regular meditation practice. Maybe it's about just looking inwardly a little bit and touching off the edges. And I think trauma plays a huge role in that as well. If people have experienced trauma, that can be very soft to touch. You can, they can feel very vulnerable around that. So I wouldn't say like inner child work is great for getting to the depths of the traumas that you experience, but just touch off it, go there with a trained therapist if that's possible, and just make a start. I think that's the key.
And the key was the hope that you're always mentioning.
I think that, like, there's always hope. Is always hope. And I've seen some people that have been so stuck, so lost, so broken, and they have just come through the other side. And it's not only hope of recovery. I think if you've been to dark places, the light looks even brighter.
I agree.
So if you're in a dark place, and I don't want to give people, set them up with false hope that it's going to be brilliant in 1 year's time, but the potential is there. And really, sometimes it's about like the awareness that I was talking about. Sometimes it's like a light bulb just coming on. It's that aha moment. It's a switch in perspective. And everything can sort of change from there. So just keep plugging away. Keep tapping away. Try to hold on to hope. And that can give you the motivation, that intrinsic motivation to keep driving forward.
Like after every night, there is a day. It means like after every darkness, there is a brightness.
Yeah, there truly is. There truly is. Just keep going. Just never give up. Just keep on going. One more day, one more step.
That's nice. So, Brian, the world is the technology world. The century is all about technology, you know, especially the kids. Like from 0 till 10, they are busy with technology. What is the key points to improve the relationship of people with technology?
This is a real struggle at the moment, and I would consider myself somebody with really good mental health. There's not much that phases me. Like anxiety drove my whole addiction. I enjoy anxiety today. I've reframed my relationship with anxiety. It's like my friend that teaches me. So I'd say I have good mental health, but the challenge of technology is a big one. It really is a big one.
And really?
I found it just grabbing me in. I'd be checking my phone for stupid things. Like I keep myself accountable with lots of health apps, and I'd be checking my health app, and I'd grab my phone 5 minutes later and I'm checking my rest and heart rate again. It hasn't changed in five minutes. So it's the phones have this weird draw for everybody, and young people especially. And I was talking to, there's this company called Unpluck. So it's like Unplug with a Q for Unpluck. And it gives you this little tile that you get with an app, and it basically just locks your phone off away. And I love the simplicity of this tool, this technology. So I reached out to the co-founders to have a chat. Because I was a neuroscientist and psychologist, they wanted to talk to me about the challenges of phone addiction. They didn't use phone addiction. I used the word phone addiction. And the co-founder actually said it to me, they never really used the word addiction, but it truly is. Like, if you think of alcohol and drug addiction, the solution for that is abstinence. Food addiction is a little bit different because you have to eat.
I agree.
And for the young kids in today's world, you can't take their phones away. It's like it's like a food addiction. It's going to be there. So how do we navigate these smartphones that are going to be in our lives? The technology is going to be there. So how do we come up with tools to stop people getting consumed by that, especially for people with challenging mental health difficulties, because they're going to use it as a coping strategy, as a false sense of connection. So I don't know what the solution is, but funnily enough, ironically enough, I think technology will be the solution for the technology. And I think apps like Unpluck, I'd highly recommend anyone struggling with phones that have a look at this app called Unpluck with a Q. And it's a really, really powerful app.
Yeah. Brian, you know, like, I will ask you something that it happens in my own life. Maybe like it's normal. When I'm thinking about something in my mind, even I'm not sharing with someone, but once I'm turning on my phone or I'm logging to the YouTube or Google, the ads will I face, it was all about what I thought. And then I'm just shocked. Oh my God, I was just thinking and it came straight away, the ads. How it's possible, Brian?
This is bizarre. And I get it if the phone is listening to you having a conversation. But it actually can predict what you're thinking. And it seems like magic, but they're not, they haven't got implants in your head just now. The challenge with that is, and where this comes from, it's through machine learning algorithms and AI algorithms. And the part of my PhD was exploring AI technology, looking at predictive models to predict certain variables of addiction, it was particularly. But what they can do is they take a lot of predictors. They have all this data of your life, so they can make predictions on what you might be thinking about based on an association of maybe a conversation you had previously. So it takes a lot of the variables, gets this data, and it can make really robust predictions on that. So it's really just a very good predictive tool, and it sends ads your way. I got an ad the other day that I was only just thinking about, and it came up. I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. But scary.
Unbelievable. It's scary. It is. Yeah, it is. Sometimes you're scaring from your own phone or laptop and you're just thinking, oh my God.
Oh my God. When we were in Trinity looking at machine learning algorithms, there's this algorithm, I think it was Amazon that had it, and it tracks your mouse. So if you're moving in a certain direction to hit log off, it will flash something up really quick to grab your attention and keep you on the platform. So it tracks the mouse. It's tracking so many things. It's, it's quite scary and it's getting better.
I agree. Yeah, it is better. So I will come back about the kids and children. You know, like the technology will, it's good to have for the kids, but sometimes it's so dangerous for their mental health. So what is necessary to do for prevent?
It's a big challenge for the young kids. I think this is where education is a really key piece. And again, we're back to those human skills. Like, we teach geography, we teach history. We get these kids to remember so many facts to recall in a book that they could get this information on Google anyway. It's a test of their memory recall, which isn't going to really serve them in life. So imagine if we replaced some of those geography and history classes with a class, how to use your smartphone in a healthy way, how to regulate your emotions so you're not using a smartphone as a coping mechanism and getting lost in Instagram for 3 hours. So it's about education. It's about an awareness. Again, that awareness of their inner world. Because if you're aware of your inner world, you are not going to react in that manner, because most people, it's really just a habit loop. And if you have a habit that is forged in that, a repetitive habit, it's going to be a cue, which could be stress, boredom, lack of connection. So you're going to want to do something to avoid the lack of something in your life. And the behavior is picking up the phone.
Yeah.
And the reward then is what you get from that phone. Mm-hmm. So we need to break the habit loop some way. And that can be challenging because sometimes it's an internal challenge that's mm-hmm. driving that. It's an emotional challenge that's driving that. So that's what makes it so difficult. But I don't think we've even gotten close to trying to figure out this problem. I think it's going to be huge. I think it's going to be an epidemic, and we're really going to have to lean into it heavily in the next few years.
But what do you think, like the awareness for the people, like awareness programs and also like having seminars and conferences for the families in the schools, like it will help?
I think it will help. I think one of the challenges with soft skills or human skills like awareness is how do you measure it? It's very hard to measure because there's no metric for your ability to be self-aware or aware as such. But I think education is a key tool for awareness, and it's just bringing it out into the open more. I think that's just really important. But one of the biggest challenges with young kids with phones is that their parents, like, we learn many things through vicarious learning. It's looking at other people in their lives. They're looking at their parents sitting looking at their phones all day. So what chance have they got? So I think we have to set the right standards and show people how to use a phone. So it's up to the adults to be able to show people how to do it.
I agree. Brian, you know what? Like, I don't want to finish this episode, because it's so interesting to have you in this episode. But I will ask you as a last question, that what is your message to the people to get happiness, to get success in their life? And how to struggle against the challenge, problem, pain.
So I have a big toolbox of strategies, tools and techniques that I've collected over the years based on my own lived experience, based on, I suppose, my academic expertise as well. But there's one core tool that I come back to again and again and again. And it's aligning yourself with your values. And your values are simply the things that are important to you. They're your true north, your guiding light of where you want to go in the world. As an example, three of my core values are my energy, my health, and my relationships. So am I taking actions and making decisions that aligns with that? Because success for me is good relationships, good health, and good energy. But there's other external factors like the business and stuff like that, and financial factors we could call that success as well. But first and foremost, they're what's important to me. But what's pulling you off course? It's our feelings, it's our emotions, it's resentment, anger, fear, anxiety. So imagine you value your mental health, but you're stressed from a hard day at work, so you feel like having a bottle of wine or two. So your feelings pull you away from what's important to you. Imagine you value your relationships and you value integrity and honesty. So you value those things, but you're having a challenge with your partner or a family member, and you feel like avoiding that difficult conversation. So it's this dichotomy between feelings pulling us off course and our values aligning us where we need to be. So again, back to awareness. We need to think, what do we value? What's important to us? What's success to us? And then keep that in the forefront of your mind so you can make decisions that align with that, what success is for you. And that's something that sort of keeps me on the right path, because the world will pull you off course. So it's really important to have the awareness around that to stay on the path.
I agree. How you got successful, man?
Right. So success for me in life, I would bring it down to inner peace. And if I have stillness of mind, the opposite of who I was when I was in the depths of addiction, that's success for me. And I do think that sends a ripple effect out. If I have peace of mind, I'm regulating my own emotions, challenges aren't going to faze me as much. I'll be intrinsically aware of what lights the fire in my belly, and that's going to help me to take external direction for those other more external successes in my life as well. And I think it all comes together, but first and foremost, it's that sense of inner peace, that sense of calm and stillness for me that's success.
Thanks a million, Brian, to coming here. It was a nice chat and interview to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having me, Hobie. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone to listening our podcast. The guest was Brian Finney, specialist and resilience keynote speaker. It was a nice chat. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
We hope you found the series helpful. Please follow us online at Open Doors Work on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thanks a million.